What was the hardest thing to adjust to when you first came into this prison?
I've always naively, I guess, thought that women were the gentler sex, that the weaker sex. That's what society wants us to believe. And the fact that women can stab a man to death 40 times, I find that incomprehensible.
South of Chicago, in the state of Indiana, two prisons hold some of America's most dangerous female criminals. The Rockville Correctional Facility and Indiana Women's Prison house over 1,800 offenders. Many are serving long sentences for extremely violent crimes. Some will end their days here.
How severely was the victim hurt?
The bullet came into close contact with his eye and
it shot him in the face.
Yes.
For 4 weeks, I was given access to a world and a culture, the like of which I've never known.
So you were classed as a baby killer?
I was that, I am that. I'm a lot more than that as well, but that's who I am.
America imprisons more women than anywhere else in the world. This is Indiana Women's Prison. My escort, Sergeant McPherson, is taking me to meet the most notorious inmate in the state, a convicted double murderer.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
And Sergeant, we're heading now to?
To the Administrative Segregation Unit. This unit is where our disciplinary offenders are. This is what you call like a punishment forum. We put them here to give them time to think about what they've done and to clear up their negative behavior.
Morning.
Offenders in this unit spend more than 20 hours a day locked in their cells. They have no contact with the rest of the prison population.
Hey, sir, are you ready?
Sarah Pender has been in this segregation unit for nearly 5 years. This is punishment not for the double murder for which she was convicted, but for an incident in 2008 which made headline news across the country.
Why do you think that they have given you this long sentence, as it were, in segregation unit?
Because I embarrassed them.
How did you embarrass them?
Well, I escaped from what was supposed to be a maximum security prison.
How did you do that?
An officer aided me.
In what way?
this is a little embarrassing. He drove me out. They have these transportation vans that come in to get fuel. They have like their own little gas station. And we planned it so that when he came in to get fuel, then I came out and got in the van.
How did you manage to persuade an officer?
Well, I didn't actually...
To take you out.
I didn't actually ask him. Yeah, I know. It's, I was having... when I was planning my escape, I planned on doing it by myself. But I needed money, and I didn't want to ask my family because I would have to lie to them about what it was for. So in order to make money, I worked with this officer who would traffic in contraband, and then my friends would sell it for money, and then I would get the money to save up for my escape. And so he was making a lot of money because I was paying him very well to do this. And he found out that I was planning an escape and saw an opportunity to make more money. And so he said, well, what if I could just roll you out of here? I said, that would be worth my while. And as a side note, I also had a sexual relationship with the officer, and that came out when I escaped, and that was very embarrassing to the department.
I think I'm beginning to understand why the authorities have taken such a strong line on your case.
Mm-hmm.
Because you mentioned it was an embarrassment. I think it's a huge embarrassment for them.
Yes, The only explanation that they've given my mother for why I'm in here is that I'm, quote, too smart for their facility.
This is the Rockville Correctional Facility, from which Sarah Pender escaped in 2008. She was on the run for more than 4 months and was labeled America's Most Wanted Woman.
Leading the way back to Indiana, two state troopers and an unmarked police car, bringing convicted murderer and prison escapee Sarah Jo Pender back to an Indiana state prison. Pender has been on the run from police since escaping from the Rockville Correctional Facility last August.
She'll have no contact with the outside. No phone calls, no visits, and will minimize her contact even with staff internally.
The state has been true to its word. And this has been Sarah Pender's life ever since. Scott Spittler, the officer who helped her escape, was jailed for 7 years. Sergeant McPherson has known Sarah Pender from the day she arrived at Indiana Women's Prison.
She must have struck up a very deep relationship, having targeted that male officer.
He was having problems at home, and she preyed on that. She preyed on his emotions. She made him feel that she was going to save him, that she would be his everything, that she would replace what he didn't have. And he was so vulnerable, he fell for it. So he did whatever she asked. He fell in love with her.
He fell in love with her?
Yes, but of course she wasn't in love with him. She used him to get what she wanted, and that was to get out of Rockville.
And you would put that down to her ability to
manipulate. I've seen a lot. I've been here for over 20 years. Sarah is one of the best manipulators I've seen.
Out in the general population, prisoners must conform to strictly regimented days. 3 hours for recreation. 15-minute sittings for meals. Apart from this routine, inmates are allowed out of their cells, although they're confined to their assigned units.
Thank you.
This is Unit 13. Offenders have just returned from lunch.
Hello.
Are you over here?
Hi.
Hello. I'm Trevor McDonald.
Hi, Trevor. I'm Addie.
Addie?
Mm-hmm.
What are you doing here today?
I'm just talking. She's doing a little crafting, a little writing.
Some cards. You're sending cards out.
Mother's Day cards. It's coming up, so we got to get them out.
Yeah. Does your mother come to see you here?
No. My mother, she lives out of state, so she really doesn't come up here much.
She's never come to see you at all?
No. We just talk on the phone.
Yeah. And how long have you been in this prison?
Since 2006.
2006?
Yes.
That's
a long time for me.
7 years.
Yeah.
Well, it's a long time not only for you, but for anybody.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
How did that come about?
I got strong armed robbery charges. So.
Strong armed robbery charges?
Yeah, that's more for like physical robbery. Like, I didn't have a gun or anything. I was fighting, punching, you know, that kind of stuff.
What were you robbing?
Oh, people. Sorry. It was 3 people.
Where was this, in the street?
Yeah, we were driving around. We stopped when we seen people walking. We hopped out the car, bum rushed them kind of, beat them up, knocked them down, tried to snatch the purses.
So you robbed 3 people?
Yeah.
How much did you take?
Oh, it was only $300 from that robbery. So it really wasn't nothing. A stupid decision, not worth anything, especially all these years of my life.
When you say from that robbery, you suggest that there were other instances.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there was. I just didn't get caught, fortunately.
How old were you when you started on this May I call it a career?
Well, since I was about 13.
School?
I went to school up until like 10th grade, then I started fighting, getting expelled, and I just stopped going. I'm actually really smart in school. I always had straight A's, but I just couldn't stay there, always fighting, getting expelled.
Well, why couldn't you stay there? Why did you find the need to fight? What?
I just have a really horrible anger problem, so I always let that get the best of me.
Even looking at you now, I'm finding it difficult to believe that you are capable of having done that.
I'm very much capable of it.
Because you're still very young.
Yeah, I'm 25.
And your sentence was?
16 years, do 8.
If you behave well.
Yeah.
If you control your anger.
Right. And actually, probably in the most recent year, I can say, I've been getting control of my anger. And I have 2 kids, so I know I have to
grow. You have 2 kids?
Yes.
How old are they?
They're 7 and 9. 2 little girls.
Do you feel you have let them down by
completely
not being there for them?
Yes, I have. And I deal with that every day, and that's really like my biggest motivation to changing and being different and coming out of here and, you know, taking something from it, not just, oh, I've been in prison. You know, I want to walk out of here and be something for them. I just do not want them to follow this same circle. Like, my mother was in prison, you know? This is
What for?
Attempted murder and aggravated robbery.
So that was not perhaps a great start for you in your life, was it?
No, it wasn't. That's kind of what, you know, kicked everything off. It's mama leaving.
Addie Hartz will be free in only a few months. She'll spend much longer picking up the threads of her life. I'm on my way to the Rockville Correctional Facility. This is the largest women's prison in the state of Indiana.
I still need Bowen, Jones, Fairchild, Andrea Jones, Dean, Rhea, Brader.
Rockville is a clearinghouse for convicts from all over the state. Some will serve all their time here. Others are assessed and moved on to other prisons. Every month, on average, 200 new offenders arrive here. This is their first port of call. From now on, their every action will be governed by prison rules.
Ready? Look right up here. 1, 2, 3.
All right, this paper here tells you we don't allow any sexual contact of any kind between you and staff and you or our offenders.
You are stuff?
Okay.
Go over there and get a styrofoam cup, put your name on it. There's water in the orange thing.
Okay.
From the way an intake looks when she comes in here, can you tell what she might be in for?
No. I don't ever try to guess. Some of them, when you look at them and you look at the offender, it's like you cannot believe that that's what she's here for.
You're frequently surprised by what they've done.
Very much so, yeah. You would, if you look at, you know, the paper and then look at her and you're going, there's no way. But, yep.
Do you see many of the same people coming and going?
Yes. They'll come in that door back there and say, I'm home. And I'm going, really? You know, because for some of them, this is, because they have nowhere else to go. Okay, I'm gonna roll each finger. I'm gonna start with your right thumb.
Hello, I'm Trevor.
Hi, I'm Paul.
Have you been in this prison before?
Yes, I have. Fort Wayne, Indiana. I've been here for possession of meth. So I've been here before, but I only stayed like an intake. I didn't leave intake, so, but this time I will.
Yes. So this time you will be in the general prison population.
Yeah, sure will.
What sort of prospect is that for you?
A little scary, but at the same time, like, I don't know, teach me little morals, you know? Teach me not to come back.
Do you have a drug dependency?
I've been to rehab, yeah. I'm an addict straight up, so yeah, I do.
How long have you been an addict?
Since I was 17 and I'm 28. A couple years, a long time.
Do you have children?
I do, I have four.
Four children?
I have four. My oldest one is 13. I have a 13-year-old, 12-year-old, 9-year-old, and a 6-year-old.
I'm trying to find a hopeful road out of this for you.
I know.
What's that?
I don't know. I have to have a game plan when I leave here, I know that. Like, going back to the life, like, when I got in trouble this time, I violated probation because I didn't have no transportation back and forth, and I wasn't using, and I haven't used for maybe 3 months at the most, you know, and that's pretty good for me because I was doing needles and all kinds of stuff. But 3 months is a big step, and I just want it a little bit further and a little bit further. But it's just, it's hard. It's really, really hard.
Thank you very much for talking to me. Good luck.
Thank you.
New inmates have a month of prison orientation. They're easily recognized by their orange uniform. For every new arrival, some other prisoner is about to leave. Martha Search is quietly counting down the days.
Thank you, ma'am.
You're welcome.
I caught up with her on her mail delivery round.
Martha, how long have you been in?
Almost 20 years.
The thought of getting out must be an exhilarating one.
Yes.
But you must also be worried about getting back into the world after all this time.
Yeah, I am, but this time has given me time to discover things I didn't have before, like patience. And I know it's going to be hard. It's going to be a little bit difficult, but I just take one day at a time. And I'm just anxious to see how the world has changed in that 20 years.
You'll have a lot to catch up on.
Yes, I have a lot to catch up on. And I have two daughters grown that were ages almost 13 and 16 when I was incarcerated, who are now 32 and 35. So I haven't seen them in a while.
Have you seen any of them since you've been here?
I haven't seen my youngest daughter since 99. She couldn't do it no more. And my oldest, I stopped coming in 2005 because she didn't want to leave without me anymore.
And you missed quite a lot.
I just went from here to Terre Haute to the hospital not long ago, and I was awestruck at the things I saw. And I had to have the officer tell me what it was because I didn't know what it was.
Things like what?
I seen this little gadget once, and I didn't know what it was, and someone said it was an iPod, so I had to have them explain to me what an iPod was, because I don't know. And a cell phone. I'm used to your cord phones at home. So, I'm like, yeah, I can't wait to get out and try these things. I'm a type of person that likes to learn things, and I'm curious, and I'm going to find out, and I'm going to get on Google. I found out all about Google and all of them. I just can't wait. I just can't wait to explore everything.
So you're waiting to make your entry back into the real world.
Yes. And I've told my children that you might still see a little prison in me because I've been down so long. You know, there might be this
one. What does that mean?
There might be this one time when I look at the clock and think it's count time. Or not sure if I should answer the telephone. And money's gonna be strange to my hands, you know? And so I said, if I act a little different or if I wander off for an hour or two, don't worry about Mom, I'm exploring.
Have you thought what your first night of freedom would be like when you can sleep in a bed of your own?
I feel it might show me how a little bit of heaven would feel. That's how I think of it, is a little bit of heaven.
Not in a dorm surrounded by other people.
Oh my God, heaven. Heaven.
For 20 years, Martha Search has been told what to do and when. All those decisions will soon be hers alone. Prison inmates on long sentences survive partly on dreams of freedom. But in August 2008, one female offender, Sarah Pender, actually broke out of Rockville. The convicted double murderer had earlier told me that her escape plan relied on the help of Officer Scott Spittler.
Now, since September, we've been hot on the trail of a woman authorities have called a female Charles Manson. Now, recently, she was added to the U.S. Marshals 15 Most Wanted list, making her the most wanted woman in America.
But how on earth do the authorities explain the fact that she escaped? Lieutenant Brad Gray was on duty on the day of the breakout.
Lieutenant Gray, what were your impressions of Sarah Pender while she was here?
She was always trying to get an advantage over someone or something. It was always about, anytime you talk to her, if you ask her a question, she would typically respond with, "What's in it for me?" And when people, you know, either say that or give you the impression that that's what they're trying to do, then it should put you on notice that, you know, you have to be careful about how you're dealing with them.
She got out through a back door in this recreation building. Having changed into casual clothes, she hid her prison uniform in the ceiling. The door alarms failed to go off, and a white van was waiting. With Pender crouching under the back seat, Spittler drove her out of the West Gate and out onto the open road.
What were your feelings about the fact that this was an officer with whom you had worked very closely, someone you knew, someone you had served with, and someone you respected as a colleague?
Once we discovered that it was him that had driven Pender out of the facility, I was just absolutely sick, just sick to my stomach, physically sick, mentally sick over the entire episode.
Sarah Pender proved to be, as you had probably thought when she came in here, that she was just as clever a manipulator as you had originally felt.
Oh, absolutely. She has proven herself to be that time and time again, and that is probably the best proof of it right then and there. If you can convince an officer, someone who was trained not to do this, somebody who was trained to maintain the order and the peace of a facility, if you can convince that person to drive you out of a correctional facility, you can convince anybody to do anything.
The authorities were bruised by Sarah Pender's escape. She was put in solitary confinement and has now been here for almost 5 years, longer than any other female prisoner in the state. Of the 1,200 offenders at Rockville Correctional Facility, 85% of them are mothers. I'm on my way to Dormitory 2, where new arrivals to the prison are housed.
Thank you.
Paula McIntosh, a mother of four, was beginning the difficult process of adjustment.
Paula, what was your first night like here?
Like going in and seeing all the new girls.
Was it a very talkative dorm? Did you get some sleep?
They let me sleep. They helped me. They talked to me a little bit, tell me if I needed any shampoo or anything. They'd help me out. But yeah, a lot of noise, a lot of echoes. You can wake up easy, you know.
What was the biggest shock to you coming into intake?
When you when you drive up in that vehicle and you turn around and you see that the last gate closed, it's like your heart goes instant. Yeah, it's really hard.
Will you have a visit soon or?
No, my family won't come up here. My dad, he doesn't really come and see us, because it's just really hard on him. So I'm pretty sure I won't get no visits.
Why won't your father come to see you?
I think it's too hard on him because there's me, and then my brother's just turned 18 and he's locked up, and it's just like a pattern, you know? And I think it's really hard on him, so he won't come see me.
It's hard on him, but it's also very tough on you that he wouldn't come to see you.
Yep. Plus, he's got my daughter. He's got my 9-year-old right now. So, you know, he's got a lot of responsibilities on him, so. I said that, I don't know, pray for him, that's all I can do.
Your daughter is 9. At that age, she's able to understand a great deal. I wonder what your father said to her or says to her about your situation.
She knows. Melissa's been, like, I've been locked up before. My daughter's Melissa, and she's, like, she's really strong, and she knows everything. I don't lie to her. I told her she knows about my drug use. She knows about my, she knows everything. And I called her this time and told her I was going to prison. And she's like, just keep your head up.
Gosh, that's pretty tear-jerking to be told by your 9-year-old daughter to keep your head up. But even for you to make a call to say that you're going to prison. And you have no idea when you'll see her again?
No. Her dad just got out of prison, and he's not seen her, not one time. And she's 9, and I guess he's just, like, coming around. My dad's letting him come and see her, like, visits. So that's, like, a big step for her, too. When is this? And then it's like, I'm there, and then I'm gone, you know?
Well, I hope your time passes here very quickly, and I hope that you get a chance to be reunited with your daughter and your family.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for talking to me.
You too.
Thank you.
At Indiana Women's Prison, it's morning recreation. It's a chance for inmates to make friends and cultivate relationships, which can be a desperately important part of prison life. The most troublesome offenders have few opportunities to do that. They are confined to this segregation unit. They have 1 hour out of their cells and are escorted, shackled, even to go for a shower. Sarah Pender's cell faces that of her friend, armed bank robber Desiree Hancock.
Put your arms back out here, then. This one?
Yeah.
I heard you tighten it up after I put it on you. Go ahead, step back.
Step out.
But I notice you're opposite Sarah Pender.
Yes, I love her. That's one of my very good friends, very good friends. I would like to give her a lot of credit for partly the woman that I am today. Like, when I get ready to show out or I get ready to snap, because this place will take you there, she'll be like, Desiree, shut up. Or, shut up, go sit down. And I'll go sit down, I'll calm down. In a place like this, friend is not a word that you just throw around. And it's not something that you just say, because women are very vindictive creatures, and they're very fake, and they're very just catty. They will smile in your face and they will just be like, hey, and I just hope nothing but the best for you. And then you turn around and they done blue slipped you like 35 times and trying to get you and your girlfriend separated.
How close do these relationships get? You mentioned women and her girlfriend. It's a pretty
they get pretty deep. They get pretty deep. A lot of women don't come in here gay. I wasn't when I came to prison, but I am now. And
you have become practicing gay?
Yes, I'm a lesbian.
Uh-huh.
Yes, I am.
But you discovered that, or you became that
became
when
that
you
here.
Here
mm-hmm.
When
I
you
was
came
married
to this.
3 years before I came to prison to a man.
And, okay.
It's just, I don't know, loneliness is what started it. And then I don't know. One thing led to another, and it may seem fake on the outside, but emotions and feelings are real.
And you have had such a deep relationship in
I've
this?
I've had two great loves. I've had a dozen relationships, but I've had two great loves. And I have...
In this prison?
Mm-hmm. And I will say that I damaged both of them. I damaged both of them.
How did you do that? How did you damage both of them?
Being a cheater, a liar, it was like being a cheater and a liar. Like, when you're in a relationship, it's like being a kid in a candy store. It's not just one girl, it's not one girl, it's 740 girls. So, and out of 740, probably only 40 ain't gay. The rest of them, this is the gayest place on earth. The rest of them are all gay.
It's lunchtime on Unit 13. Inmates follow a well-marked-out route to the food hall. I meet up again with Addie Hartz, who is hoping very soon to leave this place for good.
Am I allowed to grab one of these?
Yeah.
Okay, I'll grab one, okay. What's on the menu today?
This is a chicken patty with gravy.
What is this?
A chicken patty.
Okay.
With gravy. This is supposed to be cabbage, and this is some kind of Spanish rice, I'm sure.
Spanish rice.
Yeah. Some of it's really not bad. I'm bashing the food, but some of it really isn't that bad. Yeah. Like, I'm going to eat this, though.
Yeah, this is a good tray today.
Are you guys ready to say grace?
Yes.
Okay. Dear Lord, we come to you and thank you for this meal. We ask that you bless it and let it be nourishment to our bodies. In your precious name we pray and thank you. Amen.
Amen.
The gravy's too watery, so it made it really soggy.
The other thing is about this place, which is very obvious, is that this is an all-female environment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which you've had to get used to.
Right. And that's kind of funny because on the streets, I never really hung around females. But there's people here that I'm close with. Queenie's one of them. This is Crusher. We're close. Yeah. Not like sisters, but, you know, just close. And people that you bond with and have fun with.
Yeah.
It's okay.
We all have a common bond. No matter your crime, we all have a common bond. Like, it's, we could see someone, like, of course, having a bad day, or Addie have a bad day, and then she crying. You know, this is a no-touch facility. We're supposed to be hugging, but we do.
I feel like women need to the comfort of, hey, it's going to be all right.
Yeah.
And if you can tell me all day, but if you touch me and let me know it's going to be all right.
Keep everything surface, you know?
Is everything on the surface, or are there deeper relationships than that?
In here?
Yes.
Yeah, plenty of them. But I try not to get involved in all that. I've been involved with deeper relationships in here, and it just didn't really go well, so I just try not to.
Oh, so you were, you say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it didn't go well?
No, not at all. Like, you feel like it's going well while it's going, but once they're, like, out of sight, they go home or something, it never goes as planned. Like, all the words they've said, it doesn't add up.
Now, you're looking forward to being out in a few months, but what are the fears, what are the worries about this world that you're going into after 6, 7, 8 years?
Well,
what concerns you?
Really, just the fact of being put back in the same environment, the same surroundings, you know, and making the other choice, not the negative choice. So, what'd y'all say? Y'all don't like it?
Well, we're just looking at your cabbage. I was wondering, can I have
you're looking at the cabbage. You can have my cabbage. Yes, okay, please. Please have my cabbage.
We're allowed to share.
So you had two cabbages today.
That's right.
You'll take the chicken patty?
I sure will.
I'm glad my presence here is serving some purpose. So you've left me bread and rice.
See how
and I'm not eating my rice. You can have mine.
Thank you very much, ladies.
This is how it works around here.
Will you miss Addie? Will you miss?
Yes, I will. To me, she's a youngster. So I think it's my job to put some meat on her brain, mean put a little knowledge on her, so she won't come back here, because this is not where you want to be. I keep her grounded. Like, if she's mad, I'll be like, okay, Addie, let's talk.
Do you think that she's going to stay out of trouble?
I think so. I think she got it right. She has babies, so I think
she's going
to go home.
It kind of keeps me really motivated.
And that's the big point for you, too, isn't it? That you have your life back with your children.
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. I just can't wait. They deserve so much more. You know, like, this has been my life, and this is my parents' life, and this was their parents' life. And I'm just so ready to break that curse, that cycle.
The prison officers I spoke to were optimistic that once she's released, Addie Hartz stands a good chance of keeping out of trouble. At the end of my first visit, I asked to see the convicted double murderer, Sarah Pender, again.
Hi, Sarah.
Hi.
Once described as America's most wanted woman, her notoriety is a far cry from her formative years and life as a college student. All that changed in the year 2000. Pender was charged with the murder of a couple with whom she shared a house. They were actually shot by her boyfriend, Richard Hull, but the prosecution believed that Sarah Pender was instrumental in planning the murder. She bought the murder weapon. And she helped to dispose of the bodies in this skip.
She has a Charles Manson-like ability to manipulate people to act as surrogates for her in committing crimes. The evidence was overwhelming that if she didn't pull the trigger, she did everything else.
Pender has always admitted helping to get rid of the bodies, but she strenuously denies masterminding the killings. But she failed to convince the jury. Pender was found guilty of double murder. I kept hoping to get to the bottom of the Sarah Pender story.
Okay. The thing that I have always got from the conversations we've had before is that you're not typical of the people in this prison environment generally. Mm-hmm. Would you agree?
I would. I have a wider worldview, and I think that I've been able to glean more wisdom than the typical person. I'm generally more educated. I have 5 years of college.
Why did you choose the path that ended you up here?
It was an emotional attachment to someone who, when I found out that he dealt drugs, that I accepted it because I didn't want to lose him.
So at every stage, you were aware of where that codependency was taking you?
Yes, I went into the relationship with my eyes open. However, I was very, very naive, and I never thought that it would bring harm to me or anyone that I loved. And like most women, I thought that I could change him. And I asked him to stop selling drugs and to get a real job, and he agreed. And that was the path that I thought we were going on at the time.
Were you aware that there were guns in the house, or a gun in the house?
Yeah, I bought the gun. It was my gun. He asked me to buy him a gun.
If someone asked me to buy a gun, my first question would be, A, why me? Why are you asking me to do it? And what are you going to use it for? Mm-hmm. Did you ask those questions?
Yeah. And he told me that I was the only person who didn't have a criminal background, because in...
Well, that in itself is awfully suspicious.
Well, you can't, in America, you can't buy a firearm legally if you have a felony. And so I was the only person who was legally able to buy it. But
sure,
but
I'm talking about the fact that you were being asked to buy a gun by a felon.
The thought of being left alone frightened me more than whatever consequences would come from purchasing a firearm.
What kind of a gun was this?
It was a shotgun that you would use for hunting, like, I think birds. I don't know, I didn't pick it out.
But in the end, it was not used for hunting birds. It was used for shooting two people with whom he was in a disagreement.
Yeah. Well, he had no disagreement with the woman. He said that he shot her just because she was a witness.
The bare fact of the matter is that you purchased a gun which was used in the killing of two people. Did you think about the victims of the people who were killed in this crime?
I think about them all the time. I think more about their families. The woman had three kids. Patricia, she had three children. And despite the fact that they were both felons, drug dealers, it doesn't matter. They were still people, and they have families that love them, just like I have a family that loves me. And they can't ever get those people back.
What did you think when you heard the judge or the prosecutor pronounce a sentence on you? Because you were given two very long sentences.
Yes, I was given 110 years.
110 years?
Yeah.
What were your emotions on hearing that dreadful sentence?
Disbelief.
Why did the jury in the end conclude that you were directly involved in the murder of two people?
I knew that I had committed a crime. But I knew I wasn't guilty of murder. And I was willing to take responsibility for my actions.
In that case, was it in somebody's mind, the mind of the prosecutors, the prosecuting authorities, that you had somehow encouraged or manipulated him into committing those murders?
Yes. Yes, that was their theory, this is where the entire reputation of manipulation, that I'm a manipulator, came from. The prosecutor had went forward on the theory that I had manipulated Richard into murdering the victims, and his theory was that I wanted them out of my house.
You are being judged, or you are seen, you are perceived as a two-faced manipulator.
Yeah. Yeah. Which is a really hard label to carry. Every time I meet somebody new, if they are aware of my infamous reputation, it's a new hurdle to jump. And that's a consequence of my actions.
Next week, I talked to a woman who took the life of her 3-month-old son.
So you were classed as a baby killer?
I was that. I am that. I'm a lot more than that as well. But that's who I am.
I meet newborn Zayden.
What would you tell your son when he is old enough about where he was born and the circumstances in which he was born?
I would just tell him that mommy made a big mistake and hopefully he won't ever come to a place like this.
And I speak to a murderer who managed to stay on the run for 35 years.
I heard something coming in the back door. And I thought, oh no, it's the cops.